1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
Welcome to Not Your Mother's Menopause, making hormones make sense with Dr. Fiona Lovely. Dr. Lovely is an expert on health, treating women and their families from around the world. Her specialities include endocrinology, functional neurology, and functional medicine. Please visit us at drlovely.com. And now, here's the doctor.
Dr. Fiona Lovely here of Not Your Mother's Menopause podcast, making hormones make sense. I hope everyone's well this week. So this episode I'm calling Sex in Your Brain, although there's a whole lot more to this subject that I'd like to dive into. And really, this query comes from one of the listeners of the podcast who sent me a message on our Facebook page, Not Your Mother's Menopause podcast Facebook page, which I encourage you to go and subscribe to or like, so that you can see any updates I post there, and certainly send me any questions via that way. The question came, is it most correct to say most menopausal women experience decreased libido and vaginal dryness rather than some women? And what the person asking the question was basically saying was that there's a lot of information out there that says some women may experience this. But because her girlfriends aren't talking about it, her sister isn't talking about it, and she can't really get this information anywhere else, she's sort of wondering, is it more correct that most women experience a decrease of libido and vaginal dryness? Now, I find this line of, so I'm going to answer the question here in just a moment, but I find this line of questioning, again, just so interesting how much shame around these subjects we have in our society. And you know, this woman who represents a whole lot of other women too that have the same question. I've been asked this question from my patients many times over the years. Nobody's discussing it. It's sort of like when someone dares to ask you, one of your girlfriends dares to ask you how many times a week you have sex. Well, look, it varies so greatly that there really isn't a right answer, and there's not really a normal. There is probably a normal for you and your partner, but that it's really sort of incorrect to try to compare it to anyone else. So anyways, so let's get on with answering the question. So there's a lot of confusion again about what is normal with libido after menstruation stops. So menopause kicks in when you have, officially, when you have been 12 months without a menstrual period. If that's happened, you're menopausal, congratulations. Everything after this point is postmenopausal. Everything in the 10 years-ish prior to that is perimenopausal, okay? So the way we start to feel our moods, our libidos, our quality of sleep decline between 35 and 45. That's the start of perimenopause, until you reach that place where you've been 12 months without a period. That's most of the topics that we discuss apply to women in that perimenopausal phase. However, this topic, really about sex and libido and dryness, can apply to a woman of any age. So let's go in there. Let's dive in a little bit. So again, tons of shame with this subject. So my advice to you is be careful who you ask this question of, because we as women love to shame each other. Holy cow. Even some of my dearest friends are guilty of this, and probably I've done it too in my history. So now that I'm aware of it, I don't any longer, but oh man, we see this a lot. So if you see it coming, know that there's some sort of weird societal thing that says we should shame each other about this. Ugh, just stop the insanity. Don't you dare shame another woman about any part of her, whether it's her body or the way she thinks or the way she looks or how much sex she has. Just don't do it. Don't do it, because karma's a bitch is all I gotta say to you. Okay. Remember that everyone is different. Like I said, every couple is going to have a different sex relationship. And so just accepting that where it is a super, super important part of the evolution of understanding where you fit on the scale. And speaking of evolution, we are going to just go there a little bit, because I think it helps me anyways understand what my body is doing at this point in my life and what it will do, what it's done previously and what it'll do in the future. So we have to remember that we are animals after all. And from an evolutionary biology point of view, when a woman stops menstruating, she has stopped ovulating, which means she can no longer have a baby. And if you realize that sex, the purpose of sex is to carry our genetic information forward to the next generation via procreation or the making of babies. So when a woman no longer can procreate, she doesn't have her physical body no longer gives her the stuff she needs to procreate, like a sex drive and vaginal lubrication, etc. So our physical bodies act accordingly once we stop menstruating. And I hope that helps you sort of understand where it is. Like, think about how much energy and time you put into whoever it was you were trying to have sex with when you were a young person. Oh my gosh, it just blows my mind when I think about it for myself. And now that we're sort of like midlife and beyond, your priorities around your energy and certainly change. Anyways, so here's the thing about that evolutionary biology. We have a giant brain. And in fact, we've evolved this giant brain. Most would agree that it's because we became bipedal or upright, so walked on two limbs instead of four, and some other things, but that was sort of the great leap for us. We have this giant brain. More than a third of our brain is what's called the frontal lobe or the prefrontal cortex. And that part of the brain is the executive brain. It's the thing that makes us humans, that gives us a personality. And it's also the thing that allows us to be target-oriented. So we can become more lubricated, more sexually responsive, but only if we feel it and think it. Okay? So a few podcasts back, I talked about the power of thought for you and how we are not our genetics, but that we are, in fact, how we think and respond to our environment. And I'm just giving you another example of this now. So, you know, you've heard it said that the brain is the sexiest body part, and this is absolutely true. Because if you think about it, every single one of us has an older female friend that has a 25 or 30 year old boyfriend, and they have sex all the time, and apparently it's hot. And you go, well, how is that possible? Because I haven't even thought of my old man in that way in, you know, 10 years or whatever it happens to be for you. And the truth is, it's because when it's new, it's exciting. You can get those juices flowing, but really it's the amount of thinking that you're doing about it. Thinking about having it, thinking about how it was the last time you had it, thinking about how hot your new boyfriend or girlfriend is. I mean, all of those things just get your juices flowing. So it really, really is true that the brain is the sexiest body part. So I hope that helps you understand a little bit more about why it is that women can experience decreased libido at perimenopause. And I would say this is possible for all of us, most of us. And again, you can mess around with the hormones, the bioidentical hormones that will keep those juices flowing naturally again without without much effort on your part, mentally or otherwise. So some women do go that route as well. That's more of the Suzanne Summers approach. There's different ways about it. The other thing I want to say is, look, when you've been with your partner for decades and you've had babies together and you've been through the ride of life together, it's like, it's kind of old, right? It doesn't mean that you want to not be with your partner anymore, but you just have to find new ways to connect. And, you know, chances are, if it's a male partner, if it's a husband that we're talking about, he's not having the quality of erections that he once had either. To go back to evolutionary biology for a second, men are not wired for monogamy. They're wired to spread their genetic material wherever they can. And I'm not, please don't send me a message and saying morally, blah, 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 I hate that idea, my husband cheated on me, all of that. I don't agree with that, but that's our animal nature, okay? Whereas women, evolutionary speaking, are more interested in finding one partner that we can nest with, that we can have babies with. So it's kind of one of those things where men can continue to have a libido that's stronger, longer than we do. So, and it's only biology. So God's sakes, don't shoot the messenger, okay? I'm just sharing information. You've got to find new ways to connect with your partner. So chances are he's probably thinking about sex still as well, but can't have the quality of orgasm or erection like he used to, and neither can you. So it's a negotiation or a renegotiation of what it means. Maybe it's just touching or a massage or just being intimate and close together. It doesn't have to be intercourse. And I think that's a really, really important conversation to have, and it takes bravery and it takes vulnerability. Even if you've been with somebody for decades, it's hard to talk about this. And guys, certainly they love talking about sex, don't they? Not so much. It takes bravery and vulnerability to do it, but I'd say it's an important conversation to have at midlife and beyond if you want to continue to connect physically with your partner. So let me give you some action steps to wrap up today. Be clean and clear with your thoughts, what we think, we see. This is an immense power we have. So use that power consciously, wisely, to create the things you want in your life, not the things you don't want. Doesn't matter what you think about, good or bad, you will see it. So you might as well use the power to think about the good stuff. And sex begins with the trash being taken out. Reconnect with your partner's mind to get to your own juicy mind and thus juicy and responsive sex life. Here's a tip. Excuse me. I think I've shared this before in the podcast, but I'll share it again. If you're having troubles achieving orgasm or feeling pleasured while you're having sex with your partner, wear socks. Turns out that when a woman feels more safe and secure, she's more likely to have a good time and certainly more likely to orgasm. I mean, like, that's easy, right? I made jokes for years about the guys that wore their socks during that time, and it was like, oh, for heaven's sakes, are you worried someone's going to knock on the door? Anyways, I'm telling you now, it's okay to wear socks. And finally, keep being awesome. I love bringing these messages to you, and I certainly love it getting messages from you asking me to speak about certain topics. So thanks for listening. You can find out more about me on my website, drlovely.expert. Have a great week. The views and nutritional advice expressed by Dr. Fiona Lovely are not intended to be a substitute for conventional medical service. If you have or suspect that you have a medical problem, promptly contact your healthcare provider. No information offered here should be interpreted as a diagnosis of any disease, nor an attempt to treat or prevent or cure any disease or condition. As with any new advice or program, you should always contact your healthcare provider prior to starting anything new. Thank you.